Welcome once again to another edition of what I call American Exposé. It's the 4th of October. Time is certainly flying. Without a doubt, time is really flying. And we are, well, what are we are? What are we? We are in a set-up worldwide governmental totalitarian situation. That's where we are today, listeners. A perfect indicator of that comes out of the Oklahoman dated Monday, October 3rd, entitled, Funding is Allocated to Agencies. Listeners, Oklahoma State Law Enforcement Agencies will receive $269,000 of about $26 million being distributed nationwide by the U.S. Department of Justice. What is this money going to be used for, listeners? The Oklahoma State Bureau of Investigation, the State Department of Corrections, and the State Department of Public Safety will benefit from the money, said DeLynn Fudge, Director of the Federal Grants for the State District Attorney's Council. The OSBI will receive $212,800 for the maintenance and operation of live scan fingerprinting devices and $23,960 to purchase a portable live scan for the agency's newly created biometric field support unit. The Department of Corrections will receive $29,640 to enhance the sex offender registry. The Department of Public Safety will receive $2,600 to purchase equipment for training in state law enforcement telecommunication systems. Isn't that very, very interesting? Federal money to the state law enforcement agencies to implement the opportunity for MJTF, multi-jurisdictional task forces, to be working hand in hand when the time so requires them to do that. And it is at any time that this can happen at this point. Very amazing. Very amazing. Information in the Middle East mess, U.S. forces sweep Iraqi village. Iraq and the war on terrorism offensive appears to widen to nearby towns. And certainly, this is more than likely on the website. I hate to talk too much about this, but according to the world section of the paper, North Korea plans to resume full-scale food rationing across the impoverished communist country after ending grain sales, a UN relief agency said, quote, as of October 1st, reports are that cereal sales in the markets will cease and public distribution centers will take over countrywide distribution, end quote, the World Food Program said in a Friday dated report posted on its website. North Korea, a regime communist government left in place after the Korean War, as communism was spreading to South Korea. We, quote unquote, came to the rescue of South Korea to fend off the North Korean military, and MacArthur's Incheon landing allowed that to happen. But we were held at a stalemate at a certain point, and the winter came in, and our soldiers were frozen in time, which allowed for 8,000 POWs to be taken by the North Koreans. What should have been done? General MacArthur should have been allowed to attack Communist China and free Communist China. And what do we have today in our stores? Slave labor products made in Communist China. The plan is well in place for totalitarian communism to come into place once again. And there is the situation we have. The fall of the Soviet Union, according to Anatoly Golitsyn, was set up by design. And that is very easy to comprehend when you read and research. We see here from the AFP, dated the 4th of October, Russia and the European Union should take their relations to a, quote, new and more intensive level, end quote. Britain's Prime Minister Tony Blair said following talks with visiting Russian President Vladimir Putin. See, they play this game on us all the time. Russia had a premier, Khrushchev. Now Russia has a President Putin. How did their governmental structure change from a premier to a president? But for our dumbing down process. Putin in London for discussions with Blair, whose country holds the 6-monthly rotating EU presidency, and other leaders of the bloc, was also elusive on Tuesday. Quote, the results of the London summit have reaffirmed that we are constantly strengthening our partnership. We're adding new substance and new quality to it, end quote, the Russian leader said. Putin held talks earlier Tuesday along with EU Commission President Jose Manuel Barroso and EU External Relations Commissioner Bonita Ferrero Waldner. At a joint press conference afterwards with Putin and Barroso, Blair hailed the meeting as a good and constructive. Quote, we all want to try to take the relationship between Europe and Russia to a new and more intense level, end quote, Blair said. What did Mikhail Gorbachev say about the European Union? The new European Soviet. That was according to Charlotte Isabey, the author of the Deliberate Dumbing Down of America book. By the way, if you want to get involved here tonight, 559-781-3773. 559-781-3773. So we have Russia merging in with Europe, and the discussions covered important realities such as economy and trade, notably energy, as well as tackling crime and terrorism and the issue of human rights, Blair said. Now, undoubtedly, without a doubt, the people of Russia have probably experienced more freedom since the fall of the Soviet Union compared to the life that they lived in the past. But that will all come to a certain conclusion as the worldwide economic depression comes into place, maneuvers itself in the future. You experience here the loss of jobs, the loss of sovereignty. The manipulative direction of where we go today is in question to me all the time. Quote, according to Blair, it was a good and constructive meeting that we held today, and as I say, it has become very obvious to me, and I think my European colleagues, just how important today for our own economic future and our own security, this relationship between Russia and Europe is. I think today marks yet another development in that relationship, and one that is greatly to be welcomed. End quote. Much of this discussion centered on Russia's growing energy trade with the EU. Russia already provides about half of the 25 member bloc's natural gas and a third of its oil. Blair was questioned as to whether his dependence on Russian energy meant the EU was less keen to rock the boat over sensitive issues such as human rights abuses in Chechnya. Europe was trying to, quote, make sure that we secure our energy supplies for the future, but I think that's sensible, end quote, Blair said, but dismiss the fears. Naturally, he's going to dismiss the fears. In the Russian republics, Chechnya is a breakaway Russian republic. Now, well, what kind of play on words is that? Republic is sovereignty, and yet, why would it be a breakaway republic if it was a true republic? And what is a true republic? As we live a democracy today, here and abroad, a democracy. Why are they cramming democracy down the throats of the Iraqis when the Communist Party of Iraq is well in place, well entrenched, and on our website, AmericanExpose.com, American spelled with a K, on purpose? He added, I think the relationship was one of dependence, either on the Russian side or the European side. But what it is a recognition of a very strong set of mutual interests today. End quote. That's chilling. As we maneuver to an interdependent world, people, as our business and industry is sent below the border and overseas, I think the relationship is one of dependence, either on the Russian side or the European side. But what it is a recognition of a very strong set of mutual interests today. The Kremlin remains infuriated by Britain's failure to extricate Akhmed Zakiyev, a leading Chechen separatist representative given political asylum. The Russian Foreign Ministry last week complained about, quote, anti-Russian activities by a series of new political emerges, end quote. Britain says Russia has provided the courts with insignificant proof of Zakiyev's alleged crimes and also failed to show that the Chechen would face fair justice every turn. Oh, people. The world scene, the world situation. The scam of the century, the UN system, is truly the scam of the century when most people don't even know the word Agenda 21 and where it's being driven and what it's doing. Here we see 55 minutes ago, listeners, Hurricane Stan slammed into Mexico's Gulf Coast Tuesday, forcing authorities to close one of the nation's busiest ports and spawning related storms across the region that left at least 66 people dead, most of them from landslides in El Salvador. Ah. Isn't that amazing, listeners? More hurricanes? More steering of hurricanes? More decimation of land? More decimation of people? Left with nothing. Is there a new war going on with weather modification techniques and environmental modification techniques? I think it's been going on for years. 2 minutes ago, out of Veracruz, Mexico, Hurricane Stan smacked into Mexico's Gulf Coast on Tuesday, forcing evacuations and shutting down oil ports after killing at least 65 people in Central America. The storm came ashore 85 miles southeast of the city of Veracruz as a Category 1 hurricane with winds of nearly 80 miles per hour. Although it then weakened to a tropical storm, small groups of Mexican Navy sailors were among the few who ventured onto the darkened streets of downtown Veracruz, a colonial port city in lashing rain and high winds that snapped branches from palm trees. Fishing launches hailed out of the sea ahead of Stan's arrival lined the shorefront parked like cars. Rainwater poured off the balconies of Spanish colonial buildings. Gusts blew the roofs off poor residents' flimsy shacks, injuring four people in the state of Veracruz, and hundreds were evacuated when rivers overflowed. Veracruz resident Juan Alvarado feared for his wood and tin home. Quote, "I am worried the wind will take it away. My three children are there," end quote, he said. Quote, "There are no deaths, but things are difficult. It is too much water," end quote, said a spokesman for the State Civilian Protection Agency. Rain lashed a shanty town in the outskirts of Veracruz, where residents watched the water swell from a lagoon into neighbors' homes and debated whether to flee to shelters. According to Carolina Cagalotto, a 25-year-old mother of two, "If it raises any more, we'll have to go. But I don't want to go because people are stealing," end quote. That's what happens all the time, looting. People want what other people have. That's been around since time began, I'm sure. Stan crossed the Yucatan Peninsula during the weekend, unleashing heavy rains in Central America, where at least 65 people were killed in floods, mudslides, and rough water at sea. El Salvador was hardest hit with at least 49 deaths, while the toll in Nicaragua was 6. 8 people were reported dead in Guatemala and 2 in Honduras. Rescue workers pulled a dead 15-year-old baby from a 15-day-old baby from under a mudslide that crashed into a house in El Salvador and carried it away wrapped in a Red Cross T-shirt. 6 members of the same family died buried in the mud. The hurricane headed across mountains in the Mexican states of Veracruz and Puebla, threatening to dump as much as 20 inches of rain in isolated cases. Quote, "These rains could cause life-threatening flash floods and mudslides," end quote, said the U.S. Hurricane Center in Miami. The storm also threatened Oaxaca, one of Mexico's poorest states, where many homes are made of flimsy building materials. Mexico closed Dos Bocos, Heo Arcos, and Cozacolos, Mexico's main oil exporting ports. It was unclear if deliveries would be affected. State oil monopoly Pemex evacuated 270 workers from 5 oil exploration platforms in the Gulf of Mexico ahead of Stan's arrival. Mexico's Civil Protection Agency said it was considering evacuating thousands of people in the state of Veracruz. Rains from Stan reached Mexico City more than 250 miles away. Keep in mind, coffee is grown in Veracruz's hilly inland region, but there was no immediate word on possible crop damage. All very interesting, as we have to get to the bottom of weather modification and weather manipulation. Very, very important, people. To connect these dots to weather modification, we've got to expose this in spades. Weather wars, weather manipulation, environmental modification, creation of earthquakes, creation of volcanoes, all needs to be exposed. Right now, we have no choice. It has to be done. 57 minutes ago, Mayor Ray Nagin said Tuesday the city is laying off as many as 3,000 employees, or about half its workforce, because the financial damage inflicted on New Orleans by Hurricane Katrina. Nagin announced with great sadness that he had been unable to find the money to help the workers on the payroll. He said only non-essential workers will be laid off and that no firefighters or police will be among those let go. Nagin described the layoffs as, quote-unquote, pretty permanent, and said that the city will work with the Federal Emergency Management Agency to notify municipal employees who fled the city in the aftermath of Katrina, which struck about a month ago. And Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, is not your friendly face. It's an emergency government to take over. They have the power to take communications. They have the power to take transportation and control it. And that's exactly what they did during Hurricane Katrina. Cut communications. They did exactly what they were supposed to do, which angered many people. And the inability of the government to work was the chime of the day. Well, it worked fine. Meanwhile, former President Clinton met with dozens of New Orleans area evacuees, staying at a shelter in Baton Rouge Convention Center, and officers ended their door-to-door sweep of corpses in Louisiana with a death toll Tuesday of 972, far fewer than the 10,000 the mayor had feared at one point. Mississippi's Katrina death toll is 221, and are those real figures, or are could it be 9,000, or could it really be 10,000, or could it be more? We really don't know what happened to many people, and maybe for months we won't know what happened to many people. And apparently 1 million people were evacuated from Katrina. Where did they go? What happened to them? And wouldn't we like to have an accounting for that, which is probably nearly impossible? A company hired by the state to remove bodies will remain on call if others are found. A lot of them were shark bait, too, more than likely, and alligator bait. Clinton, working with former President Bush to raise money for victims, shook hands and chatted with the evacuees, some of whom have been sleeping on cots in the River Center's vast concrete hall for more than a month, and complained of lack of showers, clean clothes, privacy, and medical care. Quote, my concern is to listen to you and learn the best way to respond this money we've got. Bill Clinton, people. Bill Clinton. A real piece of work. An absolute total piece of work. Keep in mind, President Clinton signed Executive Order 13107. You've heard it over and over again from me. No one else, more than likely. Executive Order 13107, implementation of human rights treaties, mandating all agencies of the federal government comply with human rights treaties. And from the Office of the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights, the OHCHR, Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights, the mission statement in Geneva 2000, the mission of the Office of the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights is to protect and promote all human rights for all. All human rights for all. The mandate of the Office of the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights derives from Articles 1, 13, and 55 of the Charter of the United Nations, the Vienna Declaration and Program of Action, and Assembly Resolution 48/141 of December 20th, 1993, by which the Assembly established the post of United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights. Very ironic, listeners. Hardly ironic. 20 December 1993, 1 year after the implementation of the Rio Accords, the Earth Charter, or the Eco Earth Charter, Agenda 21, the Biodiversity Treaty. In connection with the Program for Reform of the United Nations, the Office of the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights and the Center for Human Rights were consolidated into a single office of the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights as of 15 December 1997. Under the title of Functions and Organization, the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights, A, promotes universal enjoyment of all human rights by giving practical effect to the will and resolve of the world community as expressed by the United Nations. Oh, boy. Here we go. Let's yawn some more about this. B, plays the leading role in human rights issues and emphasizes the importance of human rights at the international and national level. C, promotes international cooperation for human rights. What does all this mean to you? D, stimulates and coordinates action for human rights throughout the United Nations system. E, promotes universal ratification and implementation of international standards. F, assists in the development of new norms. G, supports human rights organs and treaty monitoring bodies. G, H, responds to serious violations of human rights. How many human rights have been violated as a result of Katrina? How many human rights have been violated as a result of the invasion of Iraq and door-to-door searches? And Operation Clenched Fist. I, undertakes preventative human rights action. J, promotes the establishment of national human rights infrastructures. K, undertakes human rights field activities and operations. L, provides education, information, advisory services, and technical assistance in the field of human rights. Remember, William Clinton, signed Executive Order 13107, Implementation of Human Rights Treaties. The Office of the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights is divided into organizational units. The office is headed by a High Commissioner with the rank of Undersecretary General. I'm going to get some coffee. It's going to be a long night as Darren and Dennis and myself will get together to modify the website again. I'll be back with a full cup of coffee. Stay with me.
Opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests, and are not necessarily those of the First Amendment Radio Network or its affiliated radio stations.
Notice, FirstAmendmentRadio.com is looking for new talent. Do you have the gift of gab? Do you got what it takes? Are you ready to go up against Alex Limbaugh, Rush Jones? Are you funny, entertaining, as well as informative? Maybe you know a local talent whom the nation deserves to hear. Send us a sample or email a bio for a live tryout. The nation is waiting to hear a new voice. It may be yours. We'll let the audience decide. Email us today, talent@firstamendmentradio.com. talent@firstamendmentradio.com. Since the beginning of time, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it, it has been traded, it has been borrowed, it has been purchased, it has been stolen, there's a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty, to ourselves and to our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188 or visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, and regular guest, world-renowned economist Robert Chapman, right here on FirstAmendmentRadio.com and WBCQ Shortwave at 4 p.m. Eastern or 1 p.m. Pacific Time. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, 1-800-375-4188.
Chris?
I'm back.
Oh, okay.
Okay, here we go.
You're on.
Okay, as we continue with this direction, oh boy, it gets stranger as the beat goes on. This whole scenario that we're living today. Let's see here. Where do we go from here? Keep in mind, the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights is accountable to the Secretary General. The High Commissioner is responsible for all the activities of the Office of the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights, as well as for its administration, and carries out the functions specifically designed or assigned to him or her by the General Assembly in its Resolution 48/141 of 20 December 1993. And subsequent resolutions of policy-making bodies, advises the Secretary General on the policies of the United Nations in the area of human rights, ensures that substantive and administrative support is given to the projects, activities, organs, and bodies of the Human Rights Program, represents the Secretary General at meetings of human rights organs and at other human rights events, and carries out special assignments as decided by the Secretary General. The Deputy to the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights, that's the Assistant Secretary General, This is once again the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights, in performance of his or her activities, is assisted by the Deputy to the High Commissioner, who acts as officer in charge during the absence of the High Commissioner. And it goes on. You have the Staff Office of the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights. And you got A, B, C, D, E, F, G on that, too. Administrative section. Just A, B on that. Then you have the New York Office of the High Commissioner, headed by the Director, who is accountable to the High Commissioner. The core functions of the New York Office are as follows. A, representing the High Commissioner at headquarters, at meetings of policy-making bodies, with permanent missions of member states, and interdepartmental and interagency meetings with non-governmental organizations and professional groups, in academic conferences, and with the media. See, this is global governance. Global governance. Interdepartmental and interagency meetings with non-governmental organizations and professional groups, at academic conferences and with the media, NGOs, public-private partnerships, global governance, listeners. The New York office is headed by a director who is accountable to the High Commissioner, listeners, and the core functions of the office, I continue, B, providing policy advice and recommendations on substantive matters to the High Commissioner, C, supplying information and advice on human rights to the Executive Office of the Secretary General, D, providing substantive support in human rights issues to the General Assembly and Economic and Social Council and other policy-making bodies established in New York. E, providing materials and information to the permanent missions, that's the permanent missions, United Nations departments, agencies and programs, non-governmental organizations, the media and others regarding the human rights program. F, providing support to the High Commissioner and other officials and to special reporters and representatives when on mission in New York. Mission. G, undertaking other specific assignments as decided by the High Commissioner. That's the New York group, huh? Then you have the Research and Right to Development branch. It's headed by the chief, who is accountable to the High Commissioner. The core functions of the Research and Right to Development branch are as follows. Promoting and protecting the right to development, in particular by supporting intergovernmental groups of experts on the preparation of the strategy for the right to development. Supporting intergovernmental groups of experts on the preparation of the strategy for the right to development. Wow. Let's have a few more hurricanes to enact that group, listeners. Or earthquakes. Or a major volcano. Assisting in the analysis of the voluntary reports by states to the High Commissioner on the progress and steps taken for the realization of the right to development and on obstacles encountered. Carrying out research projects on the right to development and preparing substantive outputs for submission to the General Assembly, the Commission on Human Rights and Treaty Bodies. Blah, 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 blah. There's so much more to this. What am I describing here? A mega, mega bureaucracy under human rights treaties, where we have Frosty Wooldridge, Jeff, Glenn Spencer. Those are the only two people that come to my mind that fight this immigration battle, which is futile. Futile, people. Futile. It's ridiculous. It's absurd. You'll never stop the flow of pawns from Mexico and below and other countries coming from Mexico. People from other countries coming through the border south of us. You never stop it as long as the UN system is in place. It's just the way it is. Our federal agencies are demanded by executive order to abide by human rights treaties. Well, they can't be very many human rights treaties, can they? That is absurd in its biggest thought. The human rights treaties are not a monster. This is my whole point. Why are these people so ignorant to what's going on when I can cover this information, you can cover this information, it's all on the website, AmericanExpose.com, it's all in the UN website, you can learn all about this, very easy to do this. You have vaccines, internship, and fellowship programs from the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights. You have the World Conference on Human Rights in 1993, right after the Agenda 21 and Biodiversity Treaty were put into action in 1992. The World Conference Against Racism, Racial Discrimination, Xenophobia, and Related Intolerance. The Chronology of Events. Well, that would be interesting to go visit. The Chronology of Events. You have human rights bodies, Commission on the Human Rights, Subcommission on the Promotion and Protection of Human Rights, Economic and Social Council, ECOSOC, General Assembly, Third Committee, Treaty Monitoring Bodies. If you really want to know about human rights treaties, go to the International Covenants on Human Rights. And then you can connect to the full list of human rights instruments. That will boggle your mind. I'm going to go to chronology of events. But in the meantime, international human rights instruments, there's new instruments under development. And the Universal Declaration of Human Rights is number one. The International Covenant on Economic and Social Cultural Rights. The International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights. Optional Protocol to the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights. The Second Protocol to the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, aiming at the abolition of the death penalty. Chronology of events, 1950s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s. Chronology of events. Oh, boy, this is juicy. So on 26 June 1945, I see, 26 June 1945, the signing of the Charter of the United Nations and the Statute of the International Court of Justice in San Francisco happened. That's the 26th of June. On the 21st of June, 1946, the establishment of the Commission of on Human Rights under Economic and Social Council Resolution 9. At its first session in 1947, the Commission establishes the Subcommission on the Prevention of Discrimination and Protection of Minorities on the basis of that resolution. This is fascinating, people. Fascinating. Let's take it up. Let's take it up to where do we want to go from here? This is a monster, listeners. The UN system is a monster. I'm, you know, it doesn't give me any pleasure to keep doing this. It doesn't give me any pleasure knowing that most people aren't doing it on the radio, on the media. These people. Where do I go from here? These people that do talk shows all over the country are not doing research. They're not studying. They're not understanding that we lost over 100,000 of our soldiers in Korea and Vietnam. We're losing lives right now in the Middle East mess of the UN system. And yet, human rights treaties are well entrenched all over the place. People aren't realizing how big this monster is, but yet any day they want, they can go on our website, AmericanExpose.com. They can punch in the United Nations. They can certainly go to other links. The United Nations is there. On the front page is the globalist. The United Nations is there under the globalist. On May 30th of 1992, the adoption of the Security Council of a resolution demanding that the parties to the conflict in Bosnia and Herzegovina allow the unimpeded delivery of humanitarian supplies. Well, what was that all about? Were the people in Yugoslavia, and that is where it was, Bosnia and Herzegovina, used to be Yugoslavia. Yugoslavia is not there anymore, people. Yugoslavia has been divided up. Why is that? Sovereignty was strong in Yugoslavia. The people of Yugoslavia did not want United Nations intrusion into their country. And what happened to them? They were given a war. If necessary, the Security Council of the United Nations will give countries wars if they do not capitulate and cooperate with the United Nations system. This is where I drew the line with Hansa. This is where I draw the line with Jeff Nyquist. They don't pay attention. They don't know how strong the United Nations system is. And it's because of this country that they're strong. And our country's money, which is actually debt note money from the Federal Reserve. We are in a major setup scenario, and people aren't paying attention. We've covered the Convention on Biological Diversity, the draft updated strategic plan of the clearinghouse mechanism for the period 2005 to 2010. It's a set-up scenario. It's mandating that populations succumb to biological diversity. Keep in mind, President Nixon signed Executive Order 11552, August 26, 1970, providing for details and transfers of federal employees to international organizations. That happened in 1970. Now federal employees are uptight and upset about their jobs because their jobs are being taken away. They're privatizing. Our federal government is privatizing American jobs. That's under the guise of global governance. I revisit this by Jesse Helms, Senator Helms, before the U.S. Senate Committee on Foreign Relations, before the United Nations Security Council, January 20th of the year 2000. It's quite lengthy. Before the United Nations Security Council, on page 2, he says, "Now, I won't delve into every point of frustration, but let's touch for just a moment one, the deadbeat charge. Before we coming here, I asked the United States General Accounting Office to assess just how much the American taxpayers contributed to the United Nations in 1999. They were the deadbeat country, remember that? Here's what the GAO reported to me. Listen to this carefully, listeners. Last year, the American people contributed a total of more than $1.4 billion to the UN system in assessments and voluntary contributions. Keep in mind, listeners, this connects to human rights treaties. All of these human rights treaties are under implementation in America today, including the Declaration on the Rights of the Child, the Convention on the Rights of the Child, Optional Protocol to the Convention on the Rights of the Child on the Involvement of Children in Armed Conflict, Slavery Convention, Protocol Amending the Slavery Convention, Supplementary Convention on the Abolition of Slavery and Slave Trade, and Institutions and Practices Similar to Slavery, the Forced Labor Convention. Well, they don't enforce that in Communist China. See how the UN's such a major setup for us? It's set up to take over this country. And we are on America, on America. So once again, last year the American people contributed a total of more than $1.4 billion to the UN system to assessments and voluntary contributions. That's pretty generous. But it's only the tip of the iceberg. The American taxpayers also spent an additional $8 billion $779 million from the United States military budget to support various UN resolutions and peacekeeping operations around the world. And he says, let me repeat that figure, $8,779,000,000. That means that last year alone, 1999, the American people have furnished precisely $10,179,000,000 to support the work of the United Nations. No other nation on earth comes even close to matching that singular investment. So you can see why many Americans reject the suggestion that theirs is a deadbeat nation. I resent it too. Now I grant you the money we spend on the UN is not charity. To the contrary, it is an investment. An investment from which the American people rightly expect a return. They expect a reformed United Nations that works more effectively and which respects the sovereignty of the United States. Is that why we have foreign troops in America today? Because of the hurricanes? Rita and Katrina. What a setup scenario we live today, America. That is why in the 1980s, Congress began withholding a fraction of our arrears as pressure for reform and congressional pressure resulted in some worthwhile reforms such as the creation of an independent UN Inspector General and the adoption of consensus budgeting practices, but still the arrears accumulated as the U.S. resisted more comprehensive reforms. It goes on. When the distinguished Secretary General Kofi Annan was elected, some of us in the Senate decided to try to establish a working relationship. The real result is the Helms-Biden law, which President Clinton finally signed into law this past November, the product of 3 years of arduous negotiations and hard-fought compromises. Was approved by the U.S. Senate by an overwhelming 98-1 margin. You should read the vote as a virtually unanimous mandate for a new relationship with a reformed United Nations. It's all hogwash. State Department has the U.S. mission to the United Nations. No mention of the State Department by Jesse Helms. No mention at all whatsoever. And that is the crux of the situation. Anyway, this timeline for the High Commissioner for Human Rights is quite amazing. It's a monster. What is the latest entry in this timeline? Huh? December 10th, 1998 was the last entry. The 50th anniversary of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. There you have it, listeners. That's the last chronological timeline. Absolutely amazing. Implementation of Human Rights Treaties, Executive Order 13107, December 10th, 1998. And what do they say? Ha, ha, ha. All human rights for all. All human rights for all. On December 10th, 1948, the international community adopted the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, a common standard of achievement which recognized the inherent dignity and the equal and inalienable rights of all people in all nations. The 50th anniversary of this historic declaration in 1998 provided the opportunity to look back on many accomplishments and to consider the lessons learned over the past 50 years in the promotion and protection of human rights. More importantly, this anniversary served as the source of a reinvigorated commitment by the international community to all that still must be done to ensure the realization and universality of human rights for all people. And then they have press releases describe activities in New York and Geneva on Human Rights Day 1998. Quite amazing. Quite amazing. So we are in this mess called the UN system. We're being maneuvered on a daily basis through this humanitarian system, quote-unquote humanitarian system. This is an ongoing deal. There's an executive order implementation of human rights treaties, December 10th, 1998. Well, these human rights don't stop. They're ongoing. They're working on the optional protocol to the Convention Against Torture and other cruel, inhumane, and degrading treatment for punishment. They have the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People. Oh, boy. Frosty Wooldridge should know about this. You people should educate Frosty Wooldridge and Glenn Spencer about the UN system. Let them know what we're involved in here, people. It's not my responsibility. I'm just telling you the facts. I just give you the facts. It's your responsibility to educate these other people, not mine. The Working Group on the Draft Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People. That fits right into Agenda 21, listeners. Right into it. Oh, boy. Chapter 26 of Agenda 21, Recognizing and Strengthening the Role of Indigenous People in Their Communities. It's being maneuvered and manipulated on a daily basis There's the optional protocol to the International Covenant on Economic and Social Cultural Rights. Ongoing directions on a daily basis. So many human rights treaties. And then you have the rights of women. Then you have the rights of the child. Two chapters devoted to women and children. Chapter 24, the Global Action for Women Towards Sustainable and Equitable Development. Chapter 25, Children and Youth and Sustainable Development. Human rights treaties connect to Agenda 21 totally. My point is, we aren't paying attention. Our other talk show hosts in the country aren't paying attention. They don't want to understand how big this monster called the United Nations is. The State Department implements the U.S. mission to the United Nations. The State Department is a monster in itself. The maneuvering processes of all these organizations are taking us down, 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 down. The Secretary of the Treasury, U.S. Governor of the IMF of the U.N. system, receives no compensation from the United States as a U.S. Governor of the IMF. The alternate governor of the IMF from this country is Alan Greenspan. China has a governor to the IMF. Russia has a governor to the IMF. Vietnam has a governor to the IMF. South Korea has a governor to the IMF. Cuba doesn't. Amazing. Do your research, people. It's way late. I really don't know why I do this. Get on board. Research AmericanExpose.com and tell us what you think. We can all be reached there on the website AmericanExpose.com.
Notice, FirstAmendmentRadio.com is looking for new talent. Do you have the gift of gab? Do you got what it takes? Are you ready to go up against Alex Limbaugh, Rush Jones? Are you funny, entertaining, as well as informative? Maybe you know a local talent whom the nation deserves to hear. Send us a sample or